I'll cop to. Haven't read the triad yet on this front, but I don't know.
I got it in front of me.
Hey there, this is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, we had the No Kings protests. I went to my very first protest over the weekend. Million or so. Yeah, I'm not a protest guy.
You've never even accidentally attended a protest or been to a March for Life? Or
No, thank you. Mass
you've
groups
met him, right? You know how he what feels a moment. About people.
I mean, I don't know.
Space.
He's like 50. It's a life is long. I don't know. There might have been one occasion before Saturday to express your dismay with the state of affairs.
Pass. I think I told you I don't even like shaking hands or sign a peace at Mass. Anyway, I am just interested in closing the loop on this to hear what you guys thought, because the three of us have not been together to discuss them afterwards. I was pretty shocked by it. My little noob neighborhood in New York City, New Jersey had like 1,000 people show up, which I mean, it was probably more than that. Again, I'm just like doing rough eyeball count. I thought, hand to God, I was like, oh, there are going to be 25 people here when I show up, because I know exactly where it is. It's by the little public library. There's a little gazebo and a tiny park. I thought it would be like a, you know, cul-de-sac potluck dinner or something. And I was shocked by it. It was really something.
Tell me more.
Huge numbers, people lining the streets, both sides of the streets, very normie. I'd say about half the people there had signs of some sort. Most of the signs handmade. The signs honestly really impressed me, because I just think of everything as an investment of time. You're already asking them to give up basically one quarter of their weekend, right? And once you factor in travel time, then walking around for 2 hours, it was a beautiful day. Everybody's got stuff to do. And the signs, like, you got to go to Michael's, you got to buy the poster board, you got to sit there with your Sharpie, you got to think of something clever. Like, you're just, that's like another hour or 2 hours that people are putting into this. And the higher that barrier to entry becomes, the more committed and intense the level of energy is around the thing. So those are my thoughts about it. I mean, maybe this is like silly, but I don't know. What did you guys think?
Tim, where did you go? Where did you?
I didn't. I was flying to California. My husband and daughter represented me in New Orleans, and they sent me photos. That's why I've not been on any of our No Kings content. I'm not going to do stolen valor for the actual protesters who are out there. So I have thoughts, meta thoughts, but I think you should go since you were actually, you know, a human in meat space.
I was in meat space. I did go out, although I will say, and I did a whole thing on this with Bill on Sunday, the day after, but I didn't go to the main big one down in DC. We did the one where we lined the streets kind of on Connecticut Avenue up in Upper Northwest.
Agoraphobia or just...
No, I wanted to take the kids, honestly. And I didn't... also, as somebody... You know, I was trying to explain to people about conservatives and protests. I know they look at the Tea Party and think, no, the right protests. And I was like... Not our kind of right. Like, there was always this joke that we would tell about, like, how do conservatives even protest? What are we supposed to say? What do we want? Incremental change. You know, when do we want it? In the due course
slowly.
Of time. Yeah, that's right. And so it's not part of our DNA. And unlike, I have been to, in my life, I had been to one march, which was a gay rights one gay marriage thing back in the day that, you know, my friends were doing. And
if God hates fags, why are we all so cute?
That's
those kinds of signs.
Those kinds of signs. That's right.
Yeah.
But other than that, I hadn't done one until I did the DC, the Free DC March, you know, a few weeks back. And I even didn't do the first No Kings. I kind of drove around and honked at people, but I didn't stand there. And but you're right about the signs. Like, my kids, and I've always had weird feelings about kids at protests, because I'm like, they don't have a political opinion. You don't use them as political props. But On the other hand, I was like, I want to talk to you about what's happening in the country. And they wanted to make their signs. And I was like, great.
Did you show them Trump pooping on people as a way to get them mad at him?
That's something that resonates with children,
I've heard.
I try hard not to show them things that appear on the internet about our political discourse. Mm. But just to finish off, where I was in D.C., I got to say, I want to double stamp Normie. Also, like, there was a guy in salmon pants protesting. I was like, that guy voted for Mitt Romney, just like me. And we're out here now. And I got to say that the thing about No Kings that really works as a frame is where it pushes people is into the democracy space in terms of what they're doing. And actually, some of the criticism from the right, which is all so lame and stupid, but one of them is like, there's nothing specific that they're asking for. And I'm like, what a brain dead like analysis of what's happening. No, they're saying, we don't want the guy to act like a dictator. And many of the things he is doing do that. He is abusing his power and we'd like him to stop. That is the frame of No Kings. But, you know, so people are out there with their flags, their pro-America signs. And it was a very sort of wholesome, peaceful, even there was like some boomers singing the battle hymn of the Republic, you know, waving their flags. And I was like, to the extent that if you had shown me that kind of protest in my younger days, like, you'd think that perhaps this was a bunch of conservatives out there because the frame is very pro-America. And so kudos to the organizers.
Yeah, that annoyed the lefties, too. And their critique was as stupid as not as stupid because they weren't, you know, calling the No Kings protesters Antifa Hamas terrorists. So less stupid than the Republicans' critique of the protesters, but stupid nonetheless. And you saw a lot of this kind of discourse on the internet. And one of the things I've been doing when I was out here is some college stuff. And I heard some of that. The college kids I heard too, their points were not stupid. They were talking more about, you know, liberal arts college discourse about how it was liberals out there. And, you know, they're more of a leftist and, you know, and that whatever. The internet, though, critique from the left, like poor Doug Emhoff got piled on as he took a picture with some lady that said if Kamala had won, we'd be at brunch. And they're like, it just shows how decadent these protests are, that they're not serious about overthrowing the capitalist system. And it's just like, guys, like, you know, you want people to get together and organize. Like, that is the whole thing of the far left. It's like always like it's organizing, community organizing. It's like, this is organizing. You know, some people are going to have signs that you find a little choogy or distasteful or whatever. Like, some people are going to have signs that are kind of lame, but that's the human experience, right? Everybody's going to have...
Is the word you use choogy?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's what the kids call us.
Choogy?
Wow. Yeah.
That's a new one for me.
There you go. Cheugy. So anyway, but like, to me, I think that has been the success of it. That it was able to broaden it out, make a lot of people feel comfortable, make people feel like they could fit in there and be a show of force against what is happening. And the goal is not organizing in the ends of, you know, unionizing a company or like some tangible thing. Like, the goal is simply a show of force that, like, we will not be beaten down by this. And so people should not roll over for Donald Trump.
I got a question for this. Our erstwhile friends Nick Catoggio wrote about this yesterday, and he said, you know, one of the important things the No Kings protest did was it accomplished showing how foolish and wrong and the lies about what the protests were from the administration, and it denied the Trump administration a pretext for invoking the Insurrection Act. And what Nick said, though, was if you're at a point where protesters have to put on inflatable frog costumes in order to deny the regime an excuse for invoking the Insurrection Act on them, aren't you already in a place that's really horrifying?
Yes.
Yes.
Right? I mean, like, The
do
fact
you listen
that,
to this show, JB?
I guess. I don't mean to bring the room down, but it, like, you know, on the one hand, yes, that was lovely, but it was all boring. Can I ask, I mean, I don't want to cap on the New York Times too much because
you
I don't want Sarah
how
to
many,
get
how many newsletters have you popped about that over the past month?
Did you guys have any thoughts about the front page of the New York Times the day following the No Kings protests?
I don't. I don't mean this as a critique of the topic to be brought up in the podcast. I mean it just simply as an expression of a take about some discourse that's out there. I don't care what's happening in the CBS News morning meeting, or okay. I don't care who the anchor is of I don't know who the anchor is of CBS Evening News. I literally could not tell you the name of the anchor.
Nora O'Donnell.
I don't believe so. She left a while ago, and she's been replaced, and I'm not sure by who. I don't care what's on the front page of the New York Times. Because you know what? Nobody reads the hard copy of the New York Times. The only people that read the hard copy of the New York Times are, no offense, I don't mean this as a pejorative, any listeners that fit this bill, old liberals that don't really have anything else to do on Sunday morning because they're not going to church. And so they don't have kids soccer anymore. And so they're reading their hard copy New York Times. That's it. And so maybe the New York Times, I guess as a business strategy, they should probably be appealing to that demo because that's the group of people that is reading the hard copy of their paper. They should probably be doing a little bit better customer service from a capitalism standpoint. But like, who cares who's on it? It's not undecided voters picking up the hard copy New York Times, I don't believe. So that's my take on it.
I think that's a good take. I want to, because not only does it not matter, like what matters is the bodies in the streets, but it also goes to the point of the mainstream media. Nobody's coming to save anybody, but the people who are getting out there. And like the No Kings thing is good. And here's what it does. You start with 5 million that come out, and then you get 7 million, and then you get 10 million. And over time, you
then
have
you get
built...
the Insurrection Act.
No, I don't think so. I mean, JBL, you pointed this out, and I think we should be incredibly grateful that people seem, and I talked about this a lot at the live shows, but now that we're on the other side of one of the largest protests in United States history, people understand that he's looking for pretext. They really do. Like these people that come out, they get it. And they are not taking the bait. And to Cattagio's point about, well, they're wearing dinosaur costumes, whatever, that is them emphatically not taking the bait and just showing. And so I think that the ability to build a turnout apparatus to get people to do a thing, to normalize doing a thing, to show other people, like, this is what offense looks like. And the New York Times, like, part of the reason you want to do this is, and I think they achieved this, everybody had to talk about No Kings, including Donald Trump, right? They set the agenda. You need more of this. And if the New York Times wants to ignore it now and put it on page 16, that's fine. You just look at
23,
and say,
page 23.
Sure, that's fine. But I do think part of it is saying, all right, we're going to keep doing this so much that you cannot ignore us. That is the goal.
Just while we're having a little fun, does anybody know who the NBC Nightly News anchor is? Just as a quick quiz, pop quiz for a political podcast.
Boy. It's that man. His yeah. name is...
There's a man.
He has brown hair. I've seen him.
Yeah. And I this isn't meant to be mean to Tom Yamas, who I love, but I saw him in the elevator when I was at...
Is that his name? I've never heard that name before in my life.
Okay. Well, I had, and I know, good reporter, and I saw him in the elevator, and he was talking to me about the Bulwark at 30 Rock about a month ago, and I was like, oh, hey, Tom, cool. Didn't congratulate him, because he had recently taken over the host chair of NBC Nightly News, and I only didn't congratulate him because I didn't know. So I apologize to Tom Yamas. I congrats on taking over the chair. I just think that, you know, the front page of the newspaper and who's the host of the news is just a little less important than it was in 1994.
And look, JBL, I know you want to move on, but I'm just going to quick say, I did this conversation with Dylan Byers on the Grill Room about the Bulwark and its growth and about where media is going.
You crushed that thing.
You're way better than me on that part.
Well, this is what we divide and conquer. Exactly. You are way, as we joked at the beginning, you are better at cutting 17 takes a day.
Thank you.
And nobody can crank out 2,000 words like JBL. Okay, but part of this is we are intense consumers of news. and we do not know who sits at these desks anymore, which is not, I think, an indictment of anybody, only a statement of where things are and where they're going. And so for all the obsession, because one of the things Dylan like just cannot get over is Barry Weiss, like the Kremlinology around Barry Weiss. And I was like, day four, Barry Weiss, what does the meeting look like? And I'm like, guys, like, and I just look, I'm not here to go after the Free Press or CBS or anything else. It's just sort of like, if the decision is I'm going to, because he was obsessed with this, the idea of like, who would buy you? How would you, what is your exit strategy?
How do you get out? These,
yeah. Like, and I'm like, that's not what we're anywhere. Thinking about.
Get out
and,
where?
But most importantly, if you want influence in the conversation, which we absolutely do, the idea that you want to be eaten by one of these dinosaurs that no one's paying attention to anymore, to me, does not seem like the best strategy for how you communicate with people, because that is a dying model and we do not want to recreate the dying model.
All right. Quick word from our sponsor, Sarah.
This show is sponsored by Remy. These days, you might be clenching your teeth every time you look at the news on your phone. And believe me, I get it. I am a bit of a teeth grinder myself. In fact, I gave myself like a headache. I give like a sharp headache because I clench my teeth so much. But I finally found a night guard that did not require a dentist visit with Remy. And I want to tell you about it, guys. Approximately 30% of U.S. adults grind and clench their teeth at night. Remy's custom night guards are clinically tested to prevent teeth grinding, reduce jaw tension and facial muscle strain, and improve your sleep quality. You'll get the same professional quality and comfort as a night guard from the dentist, but Remy costs you about 80% less and is much more convenient than having to go into your dentist's office and get one. And as an added cost benefit, you can use your HSA or FSA credits toward your night guard at checkout. So here's how it works. They send you an impression kit straight to your door. You follow Remy's step-by-step instructions to get your perfect impression. My producer and I did it right here in my office. He put the gloves on. He helped me do it. And Remy then crafts and ships your custom fit night guard. It comes right to you. So no waiting rooms, no overpriced bills, just a better way to protect your teeth while you sleep. And you can try Remy risk-free. Go to shopremy.com/thenextlevel and use code thenextlevel to get up to 50% off your night guard at checkout. Thank you, Remy, for sponsoring this episode.
The ballroom. Did either of you guys understand that the Trump Presidential Palace Ballroom and Casino was going to involve tearing down big portions of the East Wing of the White House? Because the renders I had seen, it looked like it was just sitting next to it, like Sim City style. And then all of a sudden we got pictures the other day of like, oh, they've got a demolition crew there just ripping the facade off of the East Wing of the White House. That's cool.
I want to come clean on something before we talk about this, JV.
You're going to say you don't care about this either?
I want to come clean with you about it. I have pre-taped today's daily podcast already with Jon Favreau, and I read at length from your tryout. And I think the people are going to be on your side, but I just was like, the idea that the Democrats should now promise to bulldoze the Trump ballroom and replace it with something else. I only got room for so much anger in my heart. You know,
Tim.
The East Wing, where I've never been, that I've never breached because none of my candidates ever won. Whatever. I don't know. That's. I know this is making for bad podcast, but tell me, make the case.
So the president.
Side.
So is it the case that the president is the owner of the White House?
No.
And so if he wanted to simply bulldoze the entire White House and replace it with a 10-story brutalist cube, he could do that?
Feels like an Obama question. But no, I
because it. Well, why not then? Right. If he can knock down one wing, right?
What's the question? Could he do it legally?
I'm just trying to like no kings, right? So who does the White House belong to? Is the White House a piece of the American government that belongs to all of the people who comprise America, the citizenry, or does it belong to the king who resides there? Because the Trump version of this seems to be, well, it's mine. And so I can do whatever I want with it. And that's why I think it has to be knocked down, because you have to show people that no, we don't tolerate this shit. They didn't leave the statues of Saddam up.
Josh Shapiro is going to give a barn burner speech. He says, I will tear down this ballroom.
I'm not saying this should be the centerpiece of the campaign, but in the same way that Trump would say, and we're going to do, like, I don't know, like, we're going to put Jim Comey in jail or whatever, you know, one of his applause lines. Like, this ought to be a staple of every person who's running for president as a Democrat in 2028. Right.
Is it possible to agree with both of you on this?
I think okay. so. I think it's just, because our disagreement is only to the degree of our rage. Like, yeah. I JBL is objectively right. I guess I agree with him. Yeah, the president should not be able to, like, redesign massive sections of the White House on a whim because he thinks it's his house and he wants to put his ugly ass name on shit. I hear you. I'm for that. I don't know. There are a lot of people that on the right who spend a lot of time talking about architecture. You know, Tucker Carlson's like fascist architecture stuff about how certain the brutalist architecture depresses the spirit and we need things that enliven the spirit and all this. I don't know that none of that. I'm just not an architecture girly, I guess.
Dork girly. Where are we going to go with this? Wait, so JBL, you are 100% right. And one of the things, because it is not his, and he is a steward, and part of what is happening is that the tearing down of the East Wing is an on the nose metaphor for what Donald Trump is doing to the country.
Yes.
Right? It's like, you watch him do it, and it's not because
if
I'm
this was
attached.
A novel, we
I'm
would say, oh, that is so hacky.
That's
come
right.
on. You don't
That's
need
right.
to. The subtext can remain subtext. You don't have to make it the text.
We
right?
get it, guys. He's tearing down the fabric of American democracy. But he is. And this is where Donald Trump, you know, we take him seriously or literally, and where he's being real literal in the tearing down of sort of American democracy and behaving. And I'll cop to haven't read the triad yet on this front, but I don't know.
I got it in front of me.
okay, well.
The stated policy of every Democrat seeking the presidency should be that the first thing they will do is demolish the Trump ballroom and restore the East Wing of the White House to their pre-Trump state. Jonathan Victor last.
Day one. Yeah.
Okay, and so this is the part. This
you raise your hand, you take the oath of office, that before you even go to lunch, you sign the EO.
Well, what I was going to ask you, since I have not read it, is ask you if part of what you were saying is, because this is what I would imagine a JVL would say about this, is that somebody who builds this ballroom, who tears down the East Wing, the other part of it, and this is a real JVL thing, is like, does that person seem like they're leaving? Or does it seem like they're remodeling things to their own personal specifications?
He did say that. Yeah. Good.
Okay.
Good call.
Feels like that's a thing JVL would say.
You know your name.
And so the part where I actually, like I've said, I'm very much disagree with we should in any way create the narrative that there is some actual way for him to stay. But I do agree with the point that it is so strange for a president to build all of these things. Now, it could be for posterity. Like, Donald Trump likes to build things. It's also just what he knows how to do. But there is the part of it that feels like, this isn't yours. You don't get to do all of this stuff. So, agree with that. The idea, though, that somebody should run on Turkey, because here's the thing, because it is symbolic, I think, because I look at it as a very serious metaphor of what he's doing, I would deal with the aesthetic things later. And focus on the real things. I understand what you're saying about the toppling of the Saddam things. And if there are statues of Donald Trump somewhere, I certainly think people can go ahead and topple them.
Two thoughts. Maybe instead of bringing it down, Democrats should make the new ballroom an orphanage for Venezuelan migrants. No? Okay. How about this? Other thought, my other hot take on this is there's one problem with JVL's theory. Is that the Democrats could not tear down the ballroom on the first day that they took back over because... there'd have to be 9 months of environmental study.
Yeah.
That we'd have to make sure that we'd have to contract that out. We'd have to make sure that a BIPOC woman of color was on the contracting team for the demolition. And so that's going to take a little bit. I think so, Tim, that's a problem.
You've talked about this. You know, one of the lessons that Democrats can learn from Trump is that, like, you can just do stuff.
Yeah.
Is this not a good, I mean, this project has moved that, yes, much faster than I would have been able to move on putting an addition on my house. If I wanted to build an addition on my house, it would have taken me probably 18 months to go through the process of, like, all the stuff. And here it's just
working,
like,
on a little permitting issue in my backyard.
Yeah. Right. You got to line up your financing. You got to get an architect, go back and forth over designs. The speed with, and, like, was anybody asked? Was this bid out? Like, what? It's just like, oh, it's happening. Well, I guess if that's the real precedent, Tim, is this not a good precedent for Democrats?
This is the part that voters like.
Yeah, I agree. This is what I'm like. This is the one thing Democrats should take from him, should learn from him. They, you know, oh, you want to build a fucking train? How about you just build a train people? I don't have a train fetish like all of my new friends on the left. But they've been talking about trains since I've been in high school. And they can't